Your pretty balloon and taking the moon away. It's time to wind up the masquerade. Just make your mind up. The piper must be paid. The party's over. The candles flicker and dim. Danced and dreamed through the night. It seemed to be right just being with him. Now you must wake up. All dreams must end. Take off your makeup. The party's over. It's all over. My
it's good to talk to you one more time. The party is indeed over, but one of the great difficulties of this particular time in our lives is that it's unearthly difficult to sum up the end of a course that never actually began. In this respect, my disrespect for the idea of the semester is adaptive to current circumstances. Our moments together now give way to the background default condition of moments not together. But we have your writing to work on draft by draft for as long as you care to, even after the occupation forces of the grading system have made it pointless from their point of view for you to continue working, since after all, once your grade is in, it will not change. But that doesn't mean that your writing doesn't change, or that the relationship between teacher and editor and student and writer will not change. And it may be that there will come another moment, whether soon or late, after we have ceased to be a course and the book of grades has closed, there will come a time perhaps when you want to revise or express a new idea in relation to the thinking that we did together once upon a time when everything was in lockdown. And then you will. And I will read it with satisfaction and make whatever comments about making it better seem to my judgment to be the right comments to make, and we'll go on. Lawyering occurs in order to make something happen in society using words. Teaching, on the other hand, doesn't occupy a moment. Teaching tries to create a connection that will never actually go away. But here we are, at the end of the party, summing up the thing that never quite actually happened, at least not the way happenings used to happen. But still, we have the measuring rod of our own original goals in learning to consider. And, well, whatever it was that we called life while we were living it this term, to think about. And that does create a possibility of summing up. I mean, there are numbers and plus signs and an equal at the end anyway. There are two primary goals here, one of which is to ask the question, how can we be creative in law school? How to get more out of learning and enjoying more what we learn? And the second is, how can we be creative in thinking about practice? About the way in which, as lawyers, from the moment that we enter law school until the moment that we exit the profession, either in a box or else to open a bakery, how, while we are part of the profession, can we create practice for ourselves? Those two goals share with a subsidiary third. How can we use technologies of connection in the 21st century that are simple and robust and that don't require us to rely upon the big behavior collecting third party data intermediary private intelligence services to function? How can we use those technologies to build lightweight practices that work? And how can we see their usefulness inside the law school? Usually, we are less conscious of that technology than we have been under these circumstances when A, it was all we have, and B, it isn't like that in use by everybody else. That allows us to see it separately. And I wish to come back to that before we're done. I mean, done today, done for now, done this term, but it's less important than the other things. I have tried in various different ways to suggest that what makes us creative in law school and what helps us to be more creative lawyers in practice is a discipline of understanding the world around us that I have referred to as a lawyer's theory of social action. That is to say, a cast of mind in which a person who is a lawyer uses an understanding of the way society works to grasp in more dimensions, at least four, that is, three in space and one in time, what goes on in the society around the lawyer. Because the lawyer's purpose is to make things happen in society using words, and so a theory of how things happen is valuable beyond price. I've tried to suggest that the lawyer's theory of social action is built up by layers, the application of one over another, so that we see through multiple starting points and multiple intellectual perspectives looking at the same thing, whatever it is we're looking at out there on the street, in the restaurant, in the office, in the conference room, in the legislature, in the courtroom. Wherever we are, whatever we are looking at, we are seeing it from several directions at the same time. And it's that process of seeing things from several directions at the same time and overlapping them which leads to the form of reasoning we call consilience, the jumping together of multiple ideas, a principle applied in order to take a view of life in the middle of the 19th century by, among other people, Charles Darwin, who was quite good at it, and who evolved out of layers of geology and paleobotany and earthworms and orchids and coral reefs and the expression of emotions in man and animals and in the understanding of secondary sexual selection in making the particular species Homo sapiens, and in other ways too, found overlapping forms of approach to a problem that ultimately came to be what he described as this view of life, which is, to the world around Charles Darwin, what the lawyer's theory of social action is to the world around the lawyer now, this view of society. That we make that view from perspectives which begin with the biological reality of human beings as social animals, with particularly sensory burdens. We are diurnal animals. We look through our eyes more than anything else. And in the nighttime, when our eyes don't work, we rely upon our ears, but in a different way, so that hominid primates believe what they see and imagine what they hear, among other things we can learn from the biology of being us. And how we rely upon intrapsychic psychology, the understanding of each human being's mind, and why it is that in our understanding of each human being's mind, we have to be attentive always to the multiplicity of personality, that while our minds are individuated into the physical structure of our bodies and our brains, they are also things of complex state. State upon state, perspective upon perspective. Like the ideas we generate from our minds are multiple and they overlap. And in understanding how they rise and fall together and not together, we learn to think about individual human beings in a complex and forecastable manner. And thus we build upon that to understand the influence of minds on minds, which is really the influence of states on states, which are the multiplicities of our personae interacting in a multiplicity of ways with one and to another all the way along. And how from that we learn what the presentation of self may be in everyday life, and how it is that the social psychology and sociology of our narrow vision of the thin place where social life meets individual consciousness reveals itself as a cosmos on its own. And whether we are asking how contracts are made or accidents are experienced, or why it is that a policeman believes after 26 years in the field that she is holding a taser when in fact she's about to fire a gun and kill a young man for absolutely no reason. Well, I mean, there are reasons, but none that the young man is dead. None, that is, except all the things that happen that we do not want, that are the injustice of the system in which we push people up once again against one another all the time and discover that our hope that we can implement equality requires us to do a lot more work than we usually do. And from that we discover that the culture around us, the symbolic circumstances of society and how it constructs ideas about what it means to be a person and what it means to have a race and what it means to have a gender and what it means to have a class and what it means to have a role in the world are all matters which we symbolize for one another in ways which exceed our ability to achieve, well, clarity, as opposed to interpretation. And these are only a few of the perspectives that we can bring to the social life around us, its material circumstances that we can think about economically, and its religious circumstances that we can think about philosophically, and its epidemiological circumstances, which we cannot just think about virologically. And out of all of it, we build up at any given moment not a rule book, for we are lawyers, not only a gestalt, for we are not merely right-brained artists, but both and more and in every context, constantly changing, overlapping, multiple, not simple, never just right or wrong. This makes it possible for us to be creative in law school, because no matter how hard law school tries to avoid it, society will creep in. Whether it is lying in the cases, or in the materials, or in the thin, naturally unoccurring element of the exam hypothetical, something far less than theory, or drama, or any thesis you may wish to name, hypo indeed. No matter how we encounter social life in law school, we are always encountering social life in law school, because the life of the law isn't logic, it's experience. And experience is that messy stuff out there about which we create what we understand of it as we go through it moment by moment under stress and trauma and in school. So we can always look at anything, no matter whether it has crept into an exam or merged into a case or evolved into a material. We can always look at anything in more ways than the way it is being depicted before us. And once we begin to add more to it, once we see the multiplicity of personality, once we understand the multiplicity of perspective, once we are consiliently reasoning from more than one locale at once about any given thing, then suddenly what we are doing is creating something. A theory of the case. An approach to the client. A tempo of negotiation, a patience with a prosecutor. We are taking a view of social circumstances, and we are taking it in some dimensions. We see it up and down and back and forth and past and present. We see it as an economic circumstance, a sociological confection, a psychodynamic mess, a biological inevitability. We see it in all the different ways we see it, and then we see it our way. And what that means is we have decided how to change it with our words. There used to be a restaurant in Manhattan. It died before the epidemic could kill it, but it had lived a long and useful life, quiet and spacious and well-cooked and well-served and just not very brassy. And its clientele got older with each year. And often when I went in there, I was the youngest person in the room, and it cheered me up. And I went in one night with my brother, and there happened to be eating with his parents, who lived on the Upper West Side, a great technologist and entrepreneur in the world of free software. One of the original founders of the company that became Red Hat, and the one who stayed on to be its chief technical officer, and who has, well, done many good things. And he was there with his parents and also with his daughter, who was then 12. And when he saw me walk in, he came over to our table and he brought his daughter with him and he introduced me to her. And he said to her, "Eben is the most creative lawyer in America." And I was very moved and proud, and I reflected once again on how few lawyers he knew, being, after all, a computer guy. But I certainly would have been happy to deserve his praise. Because indeed, though he wasn't flattering me mostly, he was introducing somebody to his daughter, he was putting me at ease in the indication. He was telling me that he knew not just what I was, but what I wanted to be. Which is a friendly thing to do when you're introducing some Altacocker to your children. To be a creative lawyer, never mind superlatives or even comparatives, they don't matter at all. To be a creative lawyer is to know how to think about everything in more than one way, and to know how to use the multiplicity of ways in which something can be thought about to produce not just results which are desirable, but results which are fresh in their beauty and new in their effectiveness and powerful in their being different. You will meet creativity of this kind at every scale in law, from a mere tactical innovation to a transactional improvement to, well, something that we might actually want to have incorporated into the history of our lives, like making a big difference about something, or improving the standards of living of tens of thousands of people. Naturally, a good part of what creating means in that sense is making everybody comfortable with the new, building coalitions, achieving compromises. And some of what it means is precisely the opposite, striking out on a new path, finding a way around, leaving power holding the bag, and knowing which is which and when you can have both. Law school courses in this sense are really easy. They're almost always taught by one person at a time whose opinion about what you're doing doesn't really matter very much. And even in the world where there are still such things as exams, and it absolutely drops my jaw that this is still true, that this form of dialogue between teacher and student so evidently inadequate in so many different ways, in time and space and manner. Nonetheless, we still do this, and even though this is what we do, it is still always possible for you to walk on and own the show. Because you brought not only what you were expected to bring, but also depth in other ways. Because even if this is Shakespeare, you've done Sophocles, and even if this is Harold Pinter, you've done Shakespeare. Because there's always another way to think about it, whatever the hell it is. And if you can show that you can think about it both the way that the tinkerers who put it together used to think about it and the way you can too, why then you win. No matter whether the grade is F or A, those are the only two possibilities. And that's the sweet spot. Well, of course, it isn't the sweet spot. The sweet spot is either A+, best in class, or just over the line from B+ to A-, because after all, once you think there is a spot and it belongs to someone else, then what is sweet about it is that you have been rewarded for standing there, for hitting someone else's chalk mark. And if that's your kind of sweet, then there will always be sugar for you. Always. Because you're very, very good at that. Nobody doubts it. I least of all. I've had a few weeks now in which to measure you up for that, and you measure up real good. I know that there are people who think, but I should have gotten better grades last semester, or I have got to prove myself now. But the truth is, you'd only have to prove yourself to a moron, because anybody of common intellect can see how good you are right off the top. Thing is, that's really not enough. I mean, you can make it feel like enough. If the sugar is heavy in the bag, if you've got a lot of it, if you can trade that sugar in for privileges for your children so that they grew up with a head start that maybe you didn't have, or at least as big a head start as the one your parents gave you, if you can do that, well, hell, I mean, it seems like a really good bargain, and it is. It's a really good bargain. Compared to the bargains that pretty much every other human being around the world is allowed to strike, I mean, it's really sweet, all that sugar is. There's pretty much nobody else out there in the world who gets to pick how rich to be, or how much status to have, or how much deference will be paid to you as you go about your daily route. There's some people who get a bunch of all of that because they were born on third base. And there's some people who are willing to die young in order to force the world to pay it to them, using truly force, not words. But people like you, who can do it off your wits, and who don't need to hurt anybody much to make it happen, and who didn't necessarily start out standing on third bag and planning to steal home. People like you, they're rare indeed. And here you are with everything that you could possibly want to amplify your advantages. Having come successfully to the end of the first year in law school, it's much smoother sailing from here. But it's not enough. You know it's not enough. You know it's not enough because you still have a bunch of things to say about what's wrong around you and a bunch of determination to do something. That's not gone anywhere. Lots of other people have that too, and still they're not where you are, and they don't have your possibilities, and they'll never get your range of choices. So here it is. This would be the time to learn about strategy. Strategy, that's the art of matching resources to objectives so as to achieve as many of the objectives as possible given the resources available. Mind you, it's a concept used often in the world of making things happen using force. Among the people who kill and destroy in order to achieve objectives, and we must leave them to a respectful understanding that they've had a lot of time to think about this over the millennia. And it is thought about by people who, like us, make things happen in society using words on the basis of a theory of social action, including a post-Freudian understanding of human personality, the people whom we call public relations, who are close to us in so many ways because they persuade, and who are as far away from us as possible because justice they know not. But we have not just strategy on behalf of our clients, objectives determined by the client and resources determined by the cooperation between lawyer and client in order to achieve as many things as possible before either the client runs out of money or the client runs out of need for the lawyer. We have also strategy for ourselves. And the hard part of strategy for oneself is the making of objectives. The commitment to the idea about destinations to be gotten to. Things to be searched and places to be seized, as the Fourth Amendment has it. But really, as you understand, practices to have, ways to be, lives to live, doing such and such a what, in such and such a where, with some people as a network to help us do what we need to do and to find the clients we need to pay us to do it, and we need as much as whatever it is we need in order to have enough to do what we want and live as we would. And in order to understand our objectives in that sense, we have to be prepared to imagine lives. Because, myself excepted, we are young. Experience is more to be had than to be reflected on. And lawyering, well, you're only a third of the way to the license. So it's not surprising that there's a ton of stuff you just don't know. Imagination, then, is how this particular form of creativity must occur. You can always imagine how to take a picture, but the picture you can take is determined by the objects and the lighting. Literary creation, visual art, the plasticity of surfaces we have made, software that we just thought would be neat and started to construct. Imagination, the willingness to commit internal space and time, blood, sweat, and tears to something that isn't real. This comes out of the womb into the world intact. Children grow by curiosity and imagination, by the determination to discover experience and the equal and opposite determination to transcend it by imagining how it is while refusing to be limited to the examination of what it is. You know this, you were there, in your own childhood you were there. And you understand why law school, however antithetical it may seem to childhood, well, I mean, law school's not antithetical to childhood. When we had presently existing law school, it worked a lot like high school. There were big rooms with assigned seats and lockers in the hall and but we've had to imagine all that this year because it wasn't really there. I haven't set foot in my own office since the 9th of March, 2020. Which would, if he had lived, have been my father's 84th birthday. But I can only imagine both it and him now. Which doesn't keep both my office and my father from being living real presences in my life, absent as they are. This is what it is about imagining. It's both very close to what it imagines and very far away, as it is close to the reality from which it begins and absent from the reality it has left to mind itself for a moment, so that something imaginary can replace it. And this is the lawyer's condition, present in the client's problems and activities and perhaps in the client's very living, and absent, because not the client, there to be the lawyer, which is different, which is separate, which is not like having to do the time yourself. The lawyer's relationship to the client's world is an act of imagination based on the papers. Sometimes, in order to reshape that narrative before the jury, in the agency, while making the deal, and sometimes merely the difficulty that we have understanding why it is that someone would have done whatever it was the client did. Which is why our own imagination's depth, its multiplicities, its refusal to conclude at step one, right or wrong, is so important to the work we do. But it can make it even harder to do the work we do on ourselves. It's easy just to take the sugar bag. You know it is. I can say all I want about how the OCI early interview program late this year is a theater of humiliation, and you will pay for your sugar in being subjected to condescension and misunderstanding, but that's not very important. That's just the price of sugar. It's the opportunity cost you really want to think about. And of course, risk-averse control freak law students are excellent at thinking about opportunity costs, both as an economic phenomenon and as a fear of missing out in life. God, it gnaws at you, doesn't it? All this time spent trying not to make the wrong decision, all this time spent trying to take the right course, or write the right paper, or get the right job, it's all about making sure that failure doesn't happen. As though a lawyer's failures weren't part of the power. You think you win every case? You think every deal gets made? You think you're always the smartest one in the room? Of course not. I mean, well, except for that in the room thing, you know. Creation isn't about creating the world in which you are God. Creation is not about it's always just straight through, not a hint of net. Creation is not about I have the spell that charms the birds from the trees and turns shit into gold. Creation is about the world existed and my pain and desire, my love and my uncertainty existed, and then there was something else. And when you have that, you need to share it. Share it because it makes justice. Share it because it quells injustice. Share it because it makes your living. Share it because we're a social species and there's really, well, there's just no other way. And that's always a little bit of a mystery. And it's really hard to experience when you're sitting 65 stories above the street in a room whose windows will never open, breathing air that's been breathed before, worrying about how you fit into the hierarchy of the other people up there 60 floors above the street in the rooms where the rebreathed air is never going to pass through the window that will never open. It's just really hard. Which doesn't mean it can't be done. There is Charles Ives, and he is working at the insurance company. And he's not the only one. Down the hall in the bank, there could be T.S. Eliot. And Martha Thoreau is no less on the top of the letterhead, because beauty is ultimately what she cares about, along with justice. My proposition never was that you need a garret to starve in if you want to be an artist. Though there have been an awful lot of moments on our way together when it was desirable to put me over there in that box just for a moment so that you could go back to having an internal conflict in which I wasn't leaning on the scale. That's been my part of my job, of course, both to lean on the scale and to be put in the box for doing so. But that leaning on the scale, that's just another way of saying, how about we play something together and I don't tell you what it is for the first 16 bars, I let you figure it out. Like that moment in Carnegie Hall where Dave Brubeck winds up Pennies from Heaven for 30 seconds before even the guys he plays with all the time have the vaguest idea what he's doing or where he's going. But man, when they catch on, you know, Abraham Lincoln is correct. You fool some of the people all the time, you fool all people some of the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time. And, well, I mean, you know, when you got a good network around you, when you have people who understand you and the business and who want to make a new thing together, it doesn't matter whether your idea snaps the attention first time through. It doesn't really matter whether you've rehearsed it 100 times before either. You go out there and you make whatever it is you're making. And it works or it doesn't work, or it gels or it doesn't gel, or they love it and they hate it, or whatever it is, it's still your art. So we were trying to understand how in the second semester of law school we could pick some of that up. And naturally, that means, well, at least you, maybe even me, spent time not wanting to pick it up because then we'd have to carry it. There's a lot of stuff we don't want to know. We dissociate it away. We make another personality state or an identity state for it, and we say, here, hold this. It's too hot for me. We do that because if we didn't do it, we couldn't survive. But if we want to do more than survive, then we can't just leave it there wherever we put it. We have to go back and integrate the personality we made in order to hold the trauma that we had. That can be tough to do alone, but that's part of why we're lawyers. Because we're going to do that in society using words. We're going to reduce dissociations. We're going to make things meet. We're going to require them to account for themselves, and at the end we're going to try and make a little justice. And in order to do that, we're always going to notice that the fast road is closed, blocked by limousines, covered by lobbyists, offering VIP treatment and business class performance, but We still need to get where we are going, and we're going to have to invent a way. There's no point giving exams in this. I don't just mean there's no point in my giving you an exam in this. I mean also that there's no point in your giving me one, too. The imagination test, which is law school, is not like an exam, which is why people fail to show up for it. The imagination test occurs where there's a window to look out of, where there's a pause in which to consider what you're about to do, in which, even when everything is going wrong and it feels like everything is going to fall off the table and smash beyond redemption, you can still manage the trick of slowing it all down so you can think about it. And suddenly you see there's another way. We were rushed. This was 12 weeks for 14 weeks of what would, if we were meeting twice a week, have been an awful lot of time looking at one another that we never got. I know, and you know, that Zoom would not have given it to us. Or even, some private Jitsi Meet server that actually didn't send everything to the Chinese Ministry of State Security. We used the nervous system that now embraces the entire human race, and we tried to use it not for the purpose of pretending we were together, but for the purpose of varying the form in which we were alone. The wiki is the fundamental instrument of collaboration in the 21st century, not the WhatsApp group. The wiki is a space where anything can be built in any configuration, using any configuration of people to build it with, and people to see and think about what is being built on any terms, on any timescale. And from it can dangle other forms of communication, like my voice reaching out in the dark, or a bunch of people hanging out and chatting without having to pay too much attention to who's saying what, so that we can concentrate on what is being said and what we don't understand. Or in a journal, which is one person's ruminations for another person's consideration. Our goal in the use of the material was to avoid the one thing everybody had plenty of already, and to find other ways to slow things down, to create a pause, to listen to someone else's solo, to stop trying to determine from one centralized location what every outcome ought to be. Naturally, it's a class, so all of that is merely progressive education. But if you came inside my law practice, where the wikis are in which we put everything, then you would see that, of course, it's also how we know what we know in the Hickman against Taylor work product privilege of the lawyer kind of way. How we keep track of everything we work on in the Salesforce-ish, how do I know which client to call when something goes wrong way. Mind you, when you represent a bunch of anarchic social cooperatives that make software hunched over keyboards in empty rooms, making sure that the client knows who you're going to call and how they're going to communicate among themselves, because only one of them is going to communicate with you, that's no small matter. And also how whenever we start a project, there's just a page somewhere which everybody can be thinking about and adding to, and which we can be refactoring as many times as we need in order to get where we are going. And why? Well, sometimes what you really need is a shared pad. In other words, I've tried to show you not my trumpet and how to play it, or how to pawn the instruments when you don't have a gig, but what the instruments are, not in the most fine spun of detail, because you should make them for yourself, or rather, you should put pieces together to work in a way that's good for you, the same way that nobody really uses a car the way it was when it left the factory. But mostly, that you should be aware that the tools exist for you to do efficiently and rapidly and at low cost every kind of working together with anybody that you might need to do. Which means that making things happen in society using words is easier than it ever was, and requires less big buildings and cohorts of stenographers and word processing departments and managing clerks' offices. The returns to scale have been much reduced, and the powers of autonomy have been much increased. And if you can hold that firmly in your mind, then you can understand why the people with the bags of sugar to hand out might not actually be at the cutting edge of anything. And it might be that you can lead a sweet life without them far better than they can lead a sweet life without you. Of course, this is heresy. Of course, it's heresy, because the purpose of any form of orthodoxy is to increase your need for it and to limit its need for you. But no matter what it is, no matter which empire, no matter which army, no matter which church, no matter which club, no matter which gang, it responds to Colin Powell's great and imperishable insight that everything is made of people. And the more you know about people, the more you know about everything. And so you are both present and absent in law school, in social life, in the details of your practice, because it is in that space between the things that we all know and the things that haven't quite happened yet, that all our music is made. My dear friend and deceased colleague, Kellis Parker, was right about many things, but about the relationship between law school and the law and jazz, writer than most. Because this is what we do. We see the familiar, we hear what we always hear, we look out there at the regularities of stuff that we may not like, but then there comes a moment when the question is, and what have you to say about that today? And suddenly, we're just saying it. It's true that the substances we abuse may work better for us in the making of our music than in the making of our law. And it's true that banks will loan up one side and down the other to law students and lawyers, as you well know, and they won't loan to musicians. And everybody understands that at the end of the day, there's something really disreputable about that jazz music. But it's been wearing that disrepute on its sleeve all this time, and it hasn't hurt the music yet. The only thing that will not work is never showing up to play. And the only way of doing that for people who pass through this esteemed establishment is to find a bag of sugar that doesn't require you to take any chances, if you can. And there is plenty of effort put into the search. I do want to discourage that a trifle, but I'm not actually in the business of repressing it, you know. I'm not much in the business of repressing anything for you. But I will tell you that you have two ears for a reason. And you can't just always be listening to one thing. Your practice exists, as law school exists around you. And to be creative in both is to be happier, more at peace, and way more dangerous. The trick is that you have to keep the why as you discover it. You have to understand exactly what you want to do. You have to understand exactly how you're going to do it. Then you do. And the life you lead, you look back upon with the deepest satisfaction. You build for yourself and for your family on your happiness and on your satisfaction and on the material sufficiency your work creates. And you build for yourself and your partners and the lawyers you work with interesting and valuable work that has meaning and that from day to day you want to do. And you build for your society a granule or two of excess justice. And you flush away a little bit of the evil that men do to one another. And then, when the time comes, you go out marching. It was good to be with you. See you around. Thanks a lot.
Oh, when the band begins to play.